Hello, hello, hello. Welcome to Be Bold America. I'm your host, Jill Cody, along with my co-host, Dr. Pettus Perry. Hey, Pettus, how are you today?
I'm doing really well, Jill. I'm looking forward to today's show. I think it's going to be very interesting for our listeners.
Well, I am too, but I'm barely holding it together here after the hearing with the Supreme Court's discussion on the this week on a woman's right to make decisions for her own body. My hair's on fire.
Huh? Yeah, if I had hair, my hair would be on fire, too.
So, because misery loves company, I'd love to talk more about that, but that is not the subject of our show today. Our program today is Policing, Vigilantes, and White Supremacy. Every day we are drifting farther to the political right as a minority of the country uses brute force to undermine the basic tenets of our democracy. It is a win-at-all-costs mentality. Polarities of democracy theory takes opposing perspectives in which one side wins and the other loses and reframes them to create win-win for both perspectives. The both perspectives discussion is void in many states today with open carry laws. If we are unable to settle our differences through discourse, we are very likely heading to a second civil war. They are planning it now. Hey, Pettus, would you like to introduce our guest and kick off the discussion?
I would love to, Jill. Thank you. Dr. William Binet is an activist, educator, and researcher who developed the polarities of democracy theory. He has over 50 years of experience in politics and social justice activism. He served 28 years in the Monroe County Legislature in Rochester, New York, including 5 years as its majority leader. Dr. Binet currently holds academic appointments as a dissertation committee chair with Walden University's School of Public Policy and Administration. And in the spirit of full disclosure, I also work for Walden University, albeit in a different college. He's an associate researcher with the University of Toronto's Adult Education and Community Development Program. He serves as vice president and senior fellow Polarities of Democracy Institute. Dr. Binet's work is now being used around the world for those seeking to make the promise of democracy a reality for all people. We have big things to do. Welcome, Bill. Sorry to screw up the introduction for you.
No problem, Pettus. Thank you. Thank you, and Jill, it's an honor for me to be here. And thank you for the work you're doing with the with your podcast, addressing these issues of the attack on democracy that's been underway and growing for about 40 years.
Well, Bill, I want to introduce you to Jill. She will be asking you some questions as well. Jill,
Bill. One thing. Hi, Bill. I just wanted to say hello before we got rolling. And also to mention, I hope we talk a little later about community policing because we now have a more militarized police. And I worked for I was in senior management in the city of San Jose for 15 years. And during many of those years, we were known as the safest big city in the country, but we had a community policing department that operated under that philosophy. So I hope we talk about that sometime later. Pettus?
Thanks, Jill. Bill, what I thought we might do today is to kind of discuss your work in four parts so that people can better understand it. And the areas I'd like to cover today would be the polarities of democracy, and I'll ask you some questions about that. But as Jill was alluding to, I'd like to also make sure that we cover policing, white supremacy, and racism, which I know is part of your work, policing and the rise of vigilantism, and how we're moving towards a militarized state, and then how you bring all of your work together to make it a coherent strategy, because you're doing some phenomenal work in around the globe, not just here in the U.S. So let me ask the first couple of questions. What is meant by polarities of democracy? What was the genesis of your work? You know, what are some of the polarities you work towards resolving? And can you offer some concrete examples about how your work manifests when you're engaging communities.
Sure. Thank you, Pettis. First of all, my research stemmed from a frustration that occurred over 50 years in politics. And while I had lots and lots of individual successes along the way, I was never able to truly bring about the systemic changes that are necessary to address the underlying racism that is embedded in our society, has been embedded since 1619, since the construction of our Constitution. So that's what was the impetus for my work. One of the things that I found was that around the world, whenever people are seeking to overcome oppression, their call is for greater democracy. But there is so much confusion about what is required to actually achieve democracy that, in fact, achieving the promise of democracy is very, very difficult, and we certainly have failed to do it here in America, at least for all people.
I think that that's right on time. I'm glad that you talk about systemic change and what we need to do to really reframe how we're going about the business of operating our country and our communities. Speaking of which, what are some of the community initiatives that you're working on currently or have worked
on? Yes, and I'll get back to the description of the polarities of democracy theory itself in a moment, but we have completed 20 doctoral studies at Walden that have used the polarities of democracy for a theoretical framework. These have included programs to address homelessness in New Jersey, programs to address gun violence around America, programs in Nigeria that are addressing the violence caused by Boko Haram. So all around the world, we're trying to help people understand what is the full array of values that are essential if you're going to make democracy a reality. And with that, let me jump back to the framework around polarities of democracy. It's a little challenging, but I'll try to do it simply. Barry Johnson formed the conceptual framework that I use to understand and frame the full set of values necessary to democracy. Barry Johnson talks about both either-or and both-and thinking. And to try to give you an example of what that means, think of if you choose to run a marathon, that's an either-or decision. You're either going to try to run it or you're not. But once you've made that decision, now a polarity comes into play, because to actually be capable of running that marathon, there's two poles that are interdependent. One is rest, and one is exercise. If you rest too much, like me, you're a couch potato, yeah, you're not going to run any marathons. But if you over-exercise and do nothing but exercise without the rest, you're also going to fail to run that marathon. So when you have those two poles, both poles have both positive and negative aspects, and you've got to leverage those poles to maximize the positive aspects of both rest and exercise and minimize the negative aspects of both so that you can accomplish your either-or choice of running a marathon. Well, democracy ought to be the solution to overcoming oppression. The problem is that there are 10 values, each of which is essential, none of which are sufficient in and of themselves. They all must be accomplished, and they all exist as five pairs of polarities, all with positive aspects, all with negative aspects. You have to leverage the positive aspects of all 10, minimize the negative aspects of all 10, and just to make it a little trickier, they're all interrelated between the pairs. So what are the five pairs? Freedom and authority, justice and due process, diversity and equality, human rights and communal obligations and participation and representation. And unless we get the positive aspects of all 10 of those pairs, of all those values, we cannot fully achieve the promise of democracy.
And you believe that all 10 of those are essential values?
Yes, absolutely. And if you know, if you want to look for a true founding document of what America ought to be, the Declaration of Independence, much more so than our Constitution, offers the blueprint. If you read that carefully, line by line, throughout the entire document, all 10 of these values are embedded in the Declaration of Independence. They are not embedded in our Constitution, certainly as it was constructed in its original form, which served only white men and who happened to be slave owners. But even with all of the amendments and all of the changes that we have brought to bear, it still does not address all 10 of those values.
That's an amazing way to look at those founding documents, and it's something that I think I'm going to take the time to do, you know, as I learn more about the work that you're doing. I find it fascinating. Are there things, any particular dissertations that you found were particularly, I don't want to say relevant, but particularly effective at addressing these ideas of democracy?
Yes. I'm going to pick out, start with Joe McMillan, who Joe is a former president of the National Organization of Black Law Enforcement Executives. He retired with 43 years in both military and civilian security work. And he came to study gun violence in America and used Polarity's Democracy as his theoretical framework. Now, out of his work, beyond just trying to identify the gun violence issues, he completed his work just about the time or a little before the murder of George Floyd. And when George Floyd was murdered, NOBLE, the National Organization of Black Law Enforcement Executives, where Joe is a former president, began to engage then with Congress to reinvigorate the 21st Century Policing Report that had been developed under the Obama administration and totally scrapped under the Trump administration. Now, what the 21st Century Policing Report was designed to do, and it still reads today as if it had been drawn from our current headlines, it was designed to transform policing from a warrior mentality to a guardian mentality. And it has a tremendous, it's a wonderful report with all kinds of implementation steps. But what Joe felt was lacking was the values framework to provide guidance for how this all fits together. And Joe approached NOBLE with the idea that the Polarities of Democracy could provide that value set. And he brought me in to meet with the former presidents of NOBLE and with the leadership of NOBLE. And eventually, we were able to form a strategic alliance between the Institute for Polarities of Democracy and NOBLE for an anti-racism initiative, that component one of which focuses on transforming policing from that warrior mentality to a guardian mentality and the implementation of the 21st Century Policing Report. We put out our phase one work, ended in August of this past year, this year. And in the next year, we're hoping to be able to roll out some of our work in various cities that NOBLE would like to work in across America.
Now, Bill, maybe after our break, you can tell us a little bit more about that alliance with NOBLE. You're listening to Be Bold America on KSQD 90.7 FM, Many Voices, One Station. Listen globally online from the KSQD.org website. We're speaking with Dr. William Binet, who is a professor at Walden University and who developed the Polarities of Democracy theory. Dr. Benet has over 50 years' experience in politics and social justice activism. I'm your host, Jill Cody.
Hello, K-Squid listeners. I'm Todd Hartman, and each weekday at 4 p.m., I bring you a different perspective on the news than you're likely to hear on most media outlets. Please join me on KSQD Santa Cruz, your ink spot on the dial for the Tom Hartman program, heard now for the first time ever in the Monterey Bay Area at 90.7 FM, weekdays at 4 p.m. That's Progressive Talking Conversation with me, Tom Hartman, weekdays at 4 p.m. on KSQD 90.7 FM. Tag, you're it.
Today, our topic is policing, vigilantes, and white supremacy. We're speaking with Dr. William Benet, who developed the Polarities of Democracy Theory and is currently Vice President and Senior Fellow for the Institute for Polarities of Democracy. Learn more at their website, instituteforpod.org. That's Institute for POD, meaning Polarities of Democracy.org. Pettis?
Yeah, thanks. Bill, would you continue a bit talking more about the Noble Initiatives and how that all is coming together in the collaborations that you're pulling together?
Yes. So when we decided to try to do something in response to the murder of George Floyd, potential project with Noble seemed like a natural for the Institute for Polarities Democracy. And so we put together a very short two-page proposal for how we could work together with Noble that consisted of four components. And component one really focuses on Noble's agenda, this idea of transforming policing from the warrior to the guardian mentality. And that's, we've completed phase one of that work. We're now in the phase two, and we're just in the planning stages for phase two of our work with Noble. But just working on policing is not going to solve racism in America. The project that we created that is an anti-racism initiative between the Institute and Noble. And you can't expect to solve racism by just resolving problems with policing. So component two of our work with Noble involves the Institute forging a comprehensive agenda of all of those areas that we need to address to end racial disparities, an agenda that will seek investment and commitment to social systems that are including mental health, employment, social economy, public education. Everything is inclusive in that component two. In component three, and this is being led by Dr. Nicole Hayes, who's the president of the Institute for Polarities Democracy. Dr. Hayes is a retired lieutenant colonel from the United States Army. She did her doctoral work using Polarities of Democracy, and she's looking at how you transform systems and how you use Polarities of Democracy as a vehicle for transforming systems across all of the institutions that we need to address in America. And the fourth component, the last component, is a thought leader project where we're working on mustering all of the resources from all of the schools at Walden University to have them engaged in anti-racism research and social change research across all the schools. Right now, the Polarities of Democracy has been used solely within the School of Public Policy and Administration, but we're laying the groundwork now, and over the next year or 2 years, we hope to be rolling out the Polarities of Democracy across all the schools and colleges, education, nursing, counseling, every business, all of the schools at Walden, to get their research students and faculty engaged in this anti-racism work applying Polarities of Democracy.
Well, you know, Bill, I spoke with you some time ago indicating that I was looking for a way to assist you. I think you have now given me three ways that we can talk about more fully in terms of the work that I do as well and have presented on. So I'm looking forward to expanding our conversations about these important topics. And if we might just use one example of how the polarities work, if we are talking about, let's say, racism, if that was the issue, how would you address that from the polarities perspective?
Well, one of the things that we've talked about in our report that we prepared for Noble, and it's about a 50-page report, so I'm not going to try to go into it in depth today. But for instance, we talked about the fact, and this is another way that democracy is under attack, the attack on critical race theory. Critical race theory is nothing more than ensuring that we understand how systems were formed and where they were and why they were created. And if you don't use critical race theory to do that, you overlook all of the ways in which institutionally racism has been built into our system from the very beginning. And certainly works like the 1619 Project by Nicole Hannah-Jones and so many other important studies that have been going on that look at racism. You have to make that part of your transformation of policing. If the police officers do not understand the ways in which the system has built in racism in it, they are never going to be able to transform themselves to be able to respond and treat every individual they engage with dignity and respect. And that's an essential part of transformation from a warrior to a guardian mentality.
I think that's awesome. Jill, do you have any questions?
Well, yes. I was thinking while you were talking, Bill, about the components. And how does dealing with white supremacy fit into them? How do you root out white supremacists in law enforcement? How do you, it's growing in this country, and it's very frightening to see how overt it is. And how does this an initiative, this Alliance on Anti-Racism Initiative, look at white supremacy?
Yeah, that's a challenging question. We're probably not going to deal with that completely within this hour, and I'm not going to be able to go into my theory in total depth. It's 350 pages of doctoral work. For example, take the polarity of diversity and equality. That polarity coexists with justice and due process. They interact. They all interact. But just taking that pair as an example, if you do not address the racism in the justice system and ensure that the due process applies equally to people of all races and all colors, you're not going to effectively leverage the positive aspects of justice, the positive aspects of due process, and the positive aspects of diversity and equality. And so trying to understand the tensions between those pairs, that's an essential part of the learning process, and understanding how we're under attack. We're going in the wrong direction.
Yes,
in America right now, in most of these areas, in a way that I had not anticipated in my lifetime that I would see this. I had for 50 years, even though I was frustrated with not being able to accomplish all that I wanted, I nevertheless perceived that we were on a progression of making a more perfect union. And now I see us as regressing in many areas, and certainly even when we're not regressing, we're under attack. And so we can work with an organization or a community to really go in depth into these 10 values and what are the positive aspects of each and what do you need to do to leverage the positive aspects of each in ways that we probably can't fully cover in 1 hour. But that's the essential ingredient of education and experience and understanding and seeing these polarities. You have to see the four quadrants. You have to see what it is that you're moving towards before people are going to be willing to move towards it and not have to give up the positive aspects of the pole that they may be defending.
And all of this is on the website, I know, because I was researching it. So if people want to know more about what the polarities are, I know you went over in the last segment, just check out the instituteforpod.org. Now, one of the you were talking about the guardian policing. I did want to mention that when I worked for the city of San Jose, and it was known as the safest large city in the country, it was 1 million people at the time, we had what was called community policing. And, you know, the police officers went to community events. They got out of their police cars. They walked the streets. They learned people's names that were leaders in that particular neighborhood. And they went to youth events and the homework centers. And so, you know, it was a real relationship there. And as you were talking about regressing, I later, after I left the city and went to a chair department at San Jose State University, I started watching the militarization of our own police department that was so proud of that community policing. I'm thinking community policing and guardian are the same thing. Am I right, Bill?
They are certainly compatible, and the re-engagement of community policing is a essential component of the 21st Century Policing Report, as well as the Institute for Polarities of Democracy's analysis of applying polarities of democracy to the 21st Century Policing Report. I don't see how you would get to the realization of democracy in policing without community policing. And you're 100% right. We have to stop and move away from this militarization of the police. Militarization is us versus an enemy. Policing is supposed to be about serving and protecting the community. You can't serve and protect a community if you view the community as the enemy.
And you've got tanks and yeah. riot shields. And yeah. When I was over at the university, I still lived downtown San Jose. And I guess it was Mardi Gras night, I saw probably 50 police officers marching down my street with riot gear and the screens in front of them. And it was just such a stark difference to when I'd worked with the city and community policing, and then seeing this military march down Third Street in this protective gear, going to fight, you know, just some people that are getting extra rowdy downtown for a Mardi Gras.
Yeah, yeah. It is setting up an us versus them, an enemy. To attack. Rather than a community to protect and serve.
That's right. You're listening to our guest, Dr. William Binet, who is the Vice President and Senior Fellow for the Institute of Polarities of Democracy, and who is also a professor at Walden University. In addition, if you'd like to be added to our news group, you may text Be Bold America to 22828. Text Be Bold America to 22828. I'm your host, Jill Cody.
What is so supreme about the Supreme Court? I mean, besides being housed in an imposing marble building, being the final stop on America's judicial train, and having its 9 members look photogenically authoritarian in those full-body black robes. And yes, its existence is written into the Constitution. But so is Congress, and no one thinks of it as anything supreme. We 330 million Americans are told we must obey the law as defined by a half dozen unelected lawyers on this court. Why should we democratic citizens do that? After all, these legalistic elites have no actual power to force their personal beliefs on us. There's no Supreme Court army. In fact, their sole source of power is one that is intangible, extremely fragile, and easily frittered away. Public trust. We should go along with their rulings only if they appear to be fair and honest, not based on personal whim or partisan ideology, and not meant to extend plutocratic power over the people. As Justice Elena Kagan rightly put it, the only way we can get people to do what we think they should do is because people respect us. That's where the present majority of far-right-wing appointees have failed so abjectly. Rather than meeting a lofty standard of judiciousness, all six have pulled the court down into the mire of crass Republican politics. They've corrupted the system and jiggered the law to decree that corporate campaign cash is free speech, that the state can take over women's bodies, that the Republican Party unilaterally shut millions of voters out of America's voting booth, and so awful much more that enthrones the few over the... This is Jim Hightower saying, respect, trust? The Republican court is already down to 40% public approval rating, having surrendered its legitimacy to be a governing authority over us. The Hightower Radio Lowdown is made possible by you lowdowners who subscribe to our monthly newsletter, The Hightower Lowdown. You know who you are. Thank you.
If you're just joining us, I'm your host, Jill Cody, here with my co-host, Dr. Pettus Perry. You're listening to Be Bold America on KSQD 90.7 FM. Many voices, one station. Listen globally online from the KSQD.org website. You're listening to our guest, Dr. William Benet, who is a professor at Walden University and who developed the polarities of democracy theory. Learn more by visiting instituteforpod.org. Now, Bill, I have another question. It's I'm concerned about, and I don't know if they're part of your polarities of democracy theory or the components that you have on your initiative. But I don't know how we're going to save our democracy without dealing with Fox News. You know, they've been at the forefront, and now there's Sinclair and Newsmax and One America Network and a lot of right-wing radio stations help break that public trust. And I was even saw a banner at the bottom of a Fox News screen one time where it said fake news versus Fox News. You know, the propaganda of we're the only ones you want to listen to. And they are, you know, they were originally designed to be a propaganda station. Roger Ailes went right to Richard Nixon and said he wanted a propaganda station for the Republican Party. So the word news in their name is propaganda in itself. And they have no Department of Standards of Practices. They never have. They don't have a Department of Ethics, unlike the other stations like MSNBC, NBC, CNN, ABC. They have standards and practices. There's nobody watching them. And it's gotten to the point in my mind that they've weaponized the First Amendment against democracy and against a multicultural democracy and against the people. They hide behind free speech while they're just spreading disinformation, not misinformation, but completely wrong information. Your thoughts on that?
Well, I certainly agree with everything you've said, Jill. It is a tremendous challenge. I'm not sure that I've got all the answers to that.
I'm not asking you that. I know it's a tough one. I just thought, is it being addressed that there's a right-wing media that wants the regression and is actively fighting for that?
One of my students right now is in the midst of his doctoral research looking at the role of disinformation through Fox News, through the social media, et cetera, and its impact on the attainment and strengthening of democracy. So I'll have more to say about that, obviously, when he completes his work.
Boy, I'd like to read that dissertation sometime. That's it's a very interesting topic.
Yes, and certainly a lot of this goes back under the Reagan administration, when we eliminated, what was it called, the fair...
Fairness doctrine.
The fairness doctrine, in which if you provided propaganda or even opinion, you had to leave time for an equal amount of time for opinion from the other side. And that is what has allowed, the elimination of that is what has allowed Fox News to spew 100% propaganda all the time with no rebuttal of the nonsense that they spit out. And they have managed, unfortunately, to reach a very large percentage, not a majority, but a very large percentage of the population, and it is undermining our democracy tremendously.
Pettis?
Thanks, Jill. I'd like to talk a little bit about the proliferation of weapons in our society. I'm thinking of the recent school shooting. I tend, because of my own work, to pay attention to the mass shooting tracker that you can find. And just in 2021, there have been 777 mass shootings. And since 2013, there have been 4,341 of them. And, you know, these kinds of activities become detrimental to communities in large-scale proportions. You know, so how do we begin to rein some of this back? How do we begin to deal with this idea of people taking the law into their own hands, or taking, you know, going out and creating this violence because they think they have some right to do so, and that it's okay? I'm thinking about the parents and their support of their son in obtaining this weapon and knowing that he was potentially a threat, doing nothing about it, and then, you know, essentially allowing it to happen. I'm thinking about Ahmaud Arbery. Thank God that they came down with the verdicts that they did in that case of absolute vigilantism. And also about the Kyle Rittenhouse verdict, in which he was found completely innocent after killing, you know, a couple of people and wounding others. So for me, and the work that I do, I get very concerned about the violence. And this is kind of picking up on the militarization of policing, because we're making it okay for this to happen by just allowing the numbers and the types of weapons to be introduced into our communities. What are your thoughts? How do you approach this particular issue as you look at your own work?
Yes, thank you, Pettis. That's an essential point to talk about. And let me start with the fact that, again, it's this attack on democracy. You have an entire party today that has abandoned, other than a couple of people, any pretense of fighting for democracy. It's all about this skewed libertarian approach to freedom. You can't have freedom unless you also have authority. There's positive aspects of freedom, but there are negative aspects as well. If you don't have legitimate authority to pass some of the common sense background checks, mandatory. You can't have exemptions that allow everybody to get around it by going to a gun show. You can't make it illegal for a 17-year-old to possess a gun and let him go wander the street and shoot people and claim self-defense for when he shouldn't have had the gun in the first place. And that's the Rittenhouse case. So freedom and authority, and they also link in with the human rights and communal obligations polarity. One of the problems that you have from the right these days, and you might remember Dick Armey, Republican from Texas, who was majority leader of the House, someone who I vastly disagree with. But I heard him say on a number of occasions that the problem with liberals is they actually believe that there is such a thing as the common good. Well, excuse me, but if you don't have such a thing as the common good, you cannot have democracy. And it's part of this right-wing attack, giving up any sense of communal obligations that we must have if we are going to hold people accountable when they violate the law and when they inflict violence on others. So yes, we could talk for ages about that whole issue. But gun violence in America is taking so many lives, and it's so unnecessary. But it's this false idea of freedom without any responsibilities.
Well, what I'd like to add to that, too, is when I was researching my book, America Abandoned, I've discovered that at least one toddler is killed a week in this country because of the proliferation of weapons, playing with it in their mother's purse in the shopping cart, finding it at the home, playing with it in a car, and in because it's sitting next to them. That isn't discussed at all anywhere. There's no tracking, I believe, because the Republicans kept that from happening. Any tracking database of anyone that's killed with a gun. And so this whole hidden issue of toddlers being killed once a week isn't even known or discussed. So I just wanted to toss that in. And then, you know, just to also mention that you probably heard that Ron DeSantis is creating a paramilitary force. He calls of 200 selected volunteers. I'm thinking the word instead of volunteers could be vigilantes or mercenaries. But, you know, this is a governor that wanted to give immunity, or did give immunity, to people driving a car into protesters. It's stopped in the courts right now, but that to me is just evil. And then stopped a statewide vote. The felons had the right to vote after they'd served their time, stopped that. And he has secret executive orders that he has to be sued to see by the media. He cancels nearly all of his cabinet meetings. He investigates his political enemies like Thomas Kennedy. He called him an agitator. He sends his digital mobs attacking media and press like the Associated Press. And, you know, this man is going to have a state guard or military force that's not encumbered by the federal government. It strikes terror, you know, that he would just have the only man that would have authority over them. I see this as one way to start that Second World War. Second Civil War, sorry.
Second Civil War.
See how upset I am?
Yeah. Well, I don't blame you. Those are, everything you said is a reason to be hair on fire upset, as you said to start the show.
Yes.
My frustration, frankly, right now, comes more... I know all of the things that they're doing in Florida, all of the things they're doing in Georgia, all of the things they're doing in Texas and all across the red states with voter suppression and everything else. But where is the Justice Department under Merrick Garland? I think Merrick Garland is a very decent man, but is he the right man for this job at this time? I'm not sure. I'm getting more concerned every day as I see these anti-democratic actions being taken across the country, and the Justice Department sits back and does nothing. I can't believe that there is nothing that could be done by the Justice Department to push back against these anti-democratic forces.
This would be a good time to break. We're speaking with Dr. William Binet, professor of Walden University, and who developed the polarities of democracy theory. You're listening to Be Bold America on KSQD 90.7 FM. Want a friend to hear this interview? Be Bold America is available as a podcast. Now you and your friends can listen for free on your favorite podcast platforms such as Apple, Google, Spotify, and many others. I'm your host, Jill Cody.
Tune in to KSQD Sunday at 6 p.m. for State of Mind, produced by local therapist Deborah Sloss. One in six Americans is taking care of an older adult. Most caregivers are women, and many caregivers find it difficult to balance this responsibility with their work and other family commitments. Join us as we talk with award-winning author Laura Davis, who has a new memoir about reconciling her strained relationship with her mother while caring for her during her end-of-life dementia. You'll also hear from Carl Sagnitz, Chief Medical Officer at Hospice Santa Cruz. He discusses palliative care and how families can navigate end-of-life transitions and find needed support. Join us for new understandings and seeds of possibility on State of Mind, Sunday evening at 6 p.m. here on KSQD 90.7 FM and KSQD.org.
Today, our topic is policing, vigilantes, and white supremacy. We're speaking with Dr. William Binet, who developed the polarities of democracy theory and is currently Vice President and Senior Fellow for the Institute for Polarities of Democracy. Learn more at Institute for POD. Bill, I just wanted to follow up on what you were mentioning about the Justice Department before we go on. And I think I got my inkling that there might be something wrong with the Justice Department when that fraudit was happening in Arizona. The Justice Department didn't come in and stop that. It was completely illegal. They ruined millions of dollars of machines because of taking things out of the system that they're in and the ballots. So that was my first inkling, and I completely agree with you on the Justice Department. I'm very worried. Do you have any more thoughts you wanted to say on that topic?
Unless the Justice Department becomes more active, it's just adding to our problems. During the 4 years of the Trump administration, and now with this post-election attack on democracy under Trump, all of the norms have been swept away, and we're not going to reestablish those norms by simply starting to try to do business as usual. Norms have been destroyed, and to reestablish them will require due process that brings people to justice. This is the same problem that we had back in 2008 when we had the financial collapse, and despite all of the good work that Obama-Biden administration did over the next 8 years, no one who was responsible for that financial collapse was ever even attempted to be tried. The Justice Department just abandoned any effort under that, and now we seem to be abandoning any effort to hold people accountable for the lawlessness of the past 4 years and of today. And if you don't, that's one of the strength of justice and due process. That's one of the purposes of due process, is hold people accountable. And if you don't do it, then you're never going to reestablish the norms. So I'm terribly concerned about whether Attorney General Garland has that understanding that it can't be business as usual, that we must go back and hold people accountable for the actions that they took over the last 4 years and are going on today.
Well, I'd even expand it to not only Attorney General Garland, but also to the Democratic leadership and the Democratic National Committee. I don't sense a real urgency that they completely understand where we're at this time. I mean, democracy operates on norms, as you said, but also tradition, trustworthiness, ethics, morals. We can't make a law about everything. And so we have a lot of traditions and ethics that keeps it operating. And if you have people that don't care or unethical and immoral and not trustworthy and want to blow up traditions and norms, that's now happening for the last 5 years. And I'm very concerned about where we're going, not knowing where we're going. But to get back to your work, bringing your work all together, how do you bring the work from all of your constituent groups together to create a coherent strategy of social change?
Well, that's a good question, and I'm not sure that we totally have the answer for it yet.
Working towards it?
The Institute has only been in business since 2017, and this anti-racism initiative has only been in place since September of 2020. So we're really at the beginning of this, but we are one of the ways that we're looking at it, and both for our students who are studying, they're doing doctoral studies, as well as for our postdoctoral graduates, is we're looking at the United Nations Sustainability Development Goals and how each of those can be strengthened and pursued through using Polarities of Democracy. So that's one of the ways we're trying to bring all of these things together in having an agenda to move forward.
That sounds exciting. Bill, before we begin asking you what listeners can keep doing, stop doing, and start doing to support and advance your work, is there anything else you wanted to cover?
No, I think we've just begun to touch on it, and we'll touch on it a little more with the keep, stop, and start. But as you've suggested, if people want a deeper understanding of this, they can go to the Institute for Polarities of Democracy.org, instituteforpod.org, and get a much deeper understanding of all of the values in their polarity relationships and how they work together to help us move towards a strengthening our democracy.
So what could our listeners keep doing?
Well, I'm going to try to give a global and a specific answer to that. Globally, I think those of us who are committed to it need to keep working towards perfecting a more perfect union. That's the challenge of our Constitution, and we were been on that path for 250 years, and we've got an awful long way to go. We need that multiracial democracy that supports human emancipation for all people. We need to keep working towards that. What we need to keep on the policing side is the courage and strength and defense of democracy that's inherent in serving and protecting. I never want to see the Capitol Police lose the courage that they showed on January 6th when they put their bodies between our democracy and a mob spewing the venom of white supremacy and racism. On stopping, I think we have to stop institutionalizing policies that promote white supremacy and racism. We've talked about a number of them today, the voter suppression, the gerrymandering, the Citizens United decision by the Congress. All of these things move us further away from democracy, and we've got to stop doing that. On the policing side, that includes stopping the qualified immunity for policing. We cannot allow police to go held and be held unaccountable for treating all people with dignity and respect and de-escalating situations rather than escalating them. And what people need to do to start is develop a comprehensive agenda based, I believe, on polarities of democracy, all 10 values in their 5 polarity pairs. So as I said at the beginning, that in order to fulfill our promise of democracy as stated in that Declaration of Independence, and on the very specific, right at the top of the list, we have to address and achieve income sufficiency for all people, for food, clothing, housing, medical abilities. Until we do that, you're never going to have the degree of equality that we need in America or around the globe, for that matter.
Oh, thank you, Bill. You know, this conversation is sobering, but very necessary and important. Well, I know that Pettis and I really enjoyed this conversation. I wish we had more time. Maybe you'll come back one day. Thank you for being our bold and impressive guest. We appreciate you and the Institute for Polarities of Democracy, all that you do. Thank you. And remember to visit the website Institute for Polarities of Democracy. Thank you very much, Bill, for your time.
Thank you, Jill, and thank you, Pettis. This was a tremendous honor for me. And I again, I thank you for the work that you're doing to bring the attack on democracy into focus and what we need to do to continue to fight back against it. I'd love to come back at any time. Thank you.
Oh, wonderful. Well, it's democracy is a verb. We all need to keep at it. It's not something that we're going to achieve. We just have to keep pursuing that better world, that better democracy. Thank you. What's up next on Be Bold America? Due to the Christmas and New Year holiday, Pettis and I will be taking a little time off to relax and decompress. The issues we tackle, like the one we tackled today, the issues range from frustrating to outright frightening, and we do it because you don't have to. And so our next two shows on December 19th and January 2nd, we will replay some best of. So we will bring you a live show again on January 16th, 2022, and bring you more bold guests for all of us to hear and learn from. Our first show of the new year will be Sunday, January 16th at 5 p.m. We'll be speaking with Mandla Deskins, who is the advocacy manager for Take on Wall Street. Take on Wall Street's purpose is to build a financial system that serves working families, white, black, and brown, not a financial system that serves only big Wall Street banks. Their mission is to envision a better financial system together, train activists, cultivate political champions, and deliver policy change to restore the financial sector to its rightful place in service of the real economy. So join us on Sunday, January 16th, 2022, at 5 p.m. to hear how you can take on Wall Street. Remember, Be Bold America is available as a podcast. Now you may listen to your show anytime for free wherever you get your podcasts. And I want to give a special thank you to Be Bold America's program engineer, Emily Donham, and to our program director, Howard Feldstein. And again, to today's bold guest, Dr. William Binet from Walden University and the Institute of Polarities of Democracy. And Pettis, I also want to say happy holidays to you, too. We won't be on the air until next year.
I'm sure we'll be talking anyway.
We'll be talking. We love to talk to each other off air too. But happy holidays and happy New Year to you. You're listening to KSQD Santa Cruz, many voices, one station. Listen worldwide online at ksqd.org. Stay tuned for a state of mind. My name is Jill Cody,
and I'm Dr. Pettis Perry.
And thank you for listening to Be Bold America. Until next time, keep, stop, start, and happy holidays, everyone.